Hello, everyone, and welcome to Food Safety Matters, the podcast for food safety professionals. I'm Stacey Acheson, publisher of Food Safety Magazine, and I'm very pleased to bring you an episode that, frankly, we only dreamed of being able to present to you. It's important, it's engaging, it's inspiring, and sets a bit of a challenge to the food industry. Recently, we were quite honored to receive a call from Randy Huffman, Chief Food Safety and Sustainability Officer at Maple Leaf Foods. We've known and worked with Randy for many, many years. He reached out to say that as Maple Leaf Foods approached the 10-year commemoration of the Listeria tragedy that killed 23 people in 2008, that he and Maple Leaf CEO Michael McCain would like to come on the podcast and share with the industry the story of the outbreak and the effects that it's had on Maple Leaf Foods. Listeners to the podcast and food safety professionals throughout the world know how important it is to have a food safety culture that starts at the very top and works through every aspect of a company. Still, it remains relatively rare to have a CEO who would take the step to sit down for this type of discussion. So we want to thank you, Michael, for your willingness to share your story and your powerful example of what food safety leadership looks like in practice, not just during a crisis, but every day. Before we hear the interview, I'd like to give you a little background on the company and the event that has forever changed it. Maple Leaf Foods is a leading consumer protein company, making high-quality, innovative products under national brands including Maple Leaf, Maple Leaf Prime, Maple Leaf Natural Selections, Schneider's, Schneider's Country Naturals, Mina Lightlife, and Field Roast Grain Meat Company. Maple Leaf is one of Canada's flagship food companies with sales of $3.3 billion. It employs approximately 11,500 people, and it does business in Canada, the U.S., and Asia. Maple Leaf is headquartered in Mississauga, Ontario. In August of 2008, Maple Leaf Foods initiated the largest recall in the company's history. Three SKUs of deli products manufactured at Maple Leaf Foods' Barter Road facility in Toronto, Ontario, were found contaminated with Listeria monocytogenes and linked to illness and death. Products were distributed to food service customers, including groups to have a high risk for contracting listeriosis. To contain risk, a decision was made to close the plant and recall all products back to January of 2008. This involved a massive recall of 191 products. In total, 23 people died, and thousands became ill as a result of this food safety crisis, one of the largest and most serious in Canadian history. As we mentioned, Michael McCain is President and Chief Executive Officer at Maple Leaf Foods. Michael has devoted his career to the food industry, starting at McCain Foods in the late 70s, where he held a variety of roles, including President and Chief Executive Officer of McCain Foods USA. He joined Maple Leaf Foods in 1995. Since then, he's been instrumental in establishing Maple Leaf as a strong and sustainable, values-based company with leading brands and a bold vision for the future. Dr. Randy Huffman joined Maple Leaf in 2009 and is currently Chief Food Safety and Sustainability Officer at the company. This role encompasses food safety and quality, occupational health, safety and security, environmental sustainability and compliance, animal care, and corporate engineering. Randy also leads the company's Food Safety Advisory Council, a team of external experts with the mandate to increase Maple Leaf's access to global knowledge and expertise in food safety, including best practices, regulatory compliance, microbiology, and fostering a food safety culture. Prior to joining Maple Leaf Foods, Randy served as president of the American Meat Institute Foundation, as well as senior vice president, scientific affairs for 9 years at AMI. So now, without any further ado, here's the interview.
I'd like to welcome both of you to Food Safety Matters and thank you for your desire to share your experiences about this tragic event with the food industry and our listeners today. You know, I don't believe that it's an exaggeration to state that lives will certainly be saved from others learning about your story and taking your lessons and applying it to their own situations. So I'd like to begin with you, Michael, to set the stage for our listeners about this recall. And I know that as the CEO of this company, you had put everything in place at Maple Leaf. You were going above and beyond what the current regulations required. Can you describe for our listeners what types of programs you had in place and why this came as why this outbreak really came as such a surprise to your company?
Sure. Thank you, Barbara. And first, let me begin by thanking you for having Randy and I to in this discussion today. It's I do think that continuing to focus on both the events that transpired and the learnings that resulted from that will enhance the entire industry. So let me take you back to those events. We were notified on the night of August the 23rd in 2008 that two of our products made at our Barter Road plant had been linked via DNA testing to what was described at the time as a national outbreak of listeriosis. We were notified that three people had died, and it was expected, based on the illnesses that were present, that that death toll would rise. Obviously, that was alarming in an extreme and visceral way. On the 24th of August, we made the decision to recall just over 190 of our products, and because the root cause and the status of other products coming out of that facility was opaque to us at the time, we made the decision to close the Barter Road facilities so that we could both protect the interests of consumers and complete our investigations to determine root cause as best we possibly could. Your question about what you know what that reflects is because the is very important, because we did feel at the time we had a bit of false confidence that that our programs were secure and effective, largely because we benchmarked those programs against what we understood to be best practice in the Canadian industry. But what we didn't realize is that the regulatory framework in Canada was less than adequate. We were living in a world of the complacency of best practice against a Canadian industry that was not world's best practice, and that created risk. The complacency for us is that our consumers, they trusted us. They didn't trust any excuses that we could generate or fingers that they could point. They just trusted us. And so we had to honor that trust or respect that trust and take accountability for our outcomes. And as we dug into it, became crystal clear that the complacency of the Canadian industry was unsatisfactory to us and every other participant that was a stakeholder. So we set about first, you know, the first order of business was dealing with the crisis at hand. We contacted more than 4,000 stores, retail stores, to explain our situation and address the recall. The food service channels are much more difficult to access. We made over 8,000 calls to food service end users through an external call center to advise them and work with them on executing the recall as best we could through distant food service channels. Product was recalled, disposed of. We worked with the CFIA to determine root cause in the Barter Road facility, and at the same time begin the process of remediation with all of our stakeholders across the organization, and working with the CFIA to completely rebuild the regulatory framework that existed for all the industry in Canada. We came to the conclusion at the time that the only way we could honor the death of 23 people on our watch, which is, as I said, an incredibly and deeply tragic and emotional experience, given the given the passion that we have for the products and the role that we play in the food system. The only way we could bring meaning to that was to make the long-term commitment that we would become world leaders in food safety, and I think we've made significant material progress along that continuum over the last 10 years.
You know, it's a little mind-boggling to think of the resources that you had to mobilize to respond so quickly in this situation. Randy, what did the company have in place to facilitate this response, and what did you need to assemble to start your investigation as to the source?
Well, thanks for that, Barbara. In fact, I'll just start by saying, you know, echoing Michael's comments that we appreciate the opportunity to share our story, both with you and the industry, your readers, because I do think our story can play some small role in helping others improve their performance and potentially avoid a situation such that we experienced 10 years ago. To answer your question, you know, as Michael said, we had a very robust food safety and quality program in place, and a very good process for evaluating Listeria environmental findings within the Barta Road facility, and in fact across the Maple Leaf network at the time. But what we found is clearly that wasn't good enough as a result, you know, of the outcome, which was a tragic outbreak and recall. And so, you know, what we did immediately, and I joined as an advisor just the day after the recall, and worked with Michael and the team on the ground to put in a process for truly getting at the root cause and trying to understand what happened. And for, I'm sure many of your listeners would know that, you know, getting at true root cause is not always easy. And certainly in this case, it became even more challenging because we were doing the investigation in the context of the plant being shut down, which was the right decision, but conducting an investigation in a plant that's not operating can be very challenging because the many of the factors that could cause problems are actually not occurring when you're not operating.
Right.
But with that, you know, with that challenge in front of us, we did bring in an external panel and put together a very good group of people with many diverse experiences that were able to work with the team on the ground at Barta Road. And I'll just take this moment to say that, you know, starting with Michael, who gave us all the resources we needed, and the, you know, certainly the motivation to find the problem, we were able to generate a list of very likely causes. And I'll say, you know, while we'll never know with absolute certainty, we have a pretty good belief that the root cause was a harborage point within the slicer in the facility. The slicers, two lines were affected deep within the scaling mechanism on those slicers that were simply not being fully disassembled during normal routine sanitation every night, and not being disassembled to the level of disassembly required to eliminate the harborage. And we believe that was likely, you know, the source, and, you know, the root cause would be inadequate disassembly of that equipment. There were some other findings throughout that investigation, but we believe that was the most likely source, and we worked closely with CFIA in developing that that finding. You know, Michael mentioned the fact that, you know, the real tragedy of this event would be to not learn from it and be better. And you know, one of the most important learnings out of this for us was this notion of finding the problem through our routine Listeria surveillance within the facilities, and then implementing effective corrective actions and preventative actions that fix the problem. So I like to use the mantra of find it and then fix it. And I think, you know, looking back, we actually had, we had data from the facility dating back, you know, several years of Listeria findings, but they weren't properly actioned. They weren't actioned to the level of rigor necessary to fix the problem. And, you know, if you want to break it down in real simple terms, looking backwards, we did find the problem many times through our routine sampling plans, you know, in the prior year. And that was recorded in the records, but we didn't do enough to fix the problem, to put in corrective actions and to truly get to root cause. And, you know, if there's one thing that your listeners take away from our experience, it's to make sure that you get that lesson, that every time you find an issue, whether it's a Listeria problem or any other food safety challenge, you know, the surveillance of your systems tells you when you have a problem. It's just as important to put in effective corrective actions to prevent it from happening again.
When I've talked to folks about Listeria and environmental monitoring, you know, a couple things are always brought to light. One is Listeria is so ubiquitous in plant environments that when incidental positives come up, sometimes people are a little blasé about, well, it's there. Or if it's popping up at different places and they're not seeing a trend in a particular location, folks might get a little maybe lackadaisical about really investigating where it's coming from. So do you treat every positive that you see as something that you need to find the source? Has that changed in your mm-hmm. facility in response to this?
Well, absolutely. Barbara, and actually, Michael, you may want to comment on this as well. We actually respond to every positive result in a very aggressive way. Our operational teams form what we call a seek and destroy team. It's a very standardized team that has cross-functional representation. And that seek and destroy team responds to every positive environmental Listeria that we get, whether it's on a food contact surface or a non-food contact surface. And we attempt to get to the root cause of every one of those findings. We actually instituted, with Michael's leadership, a daily call that we still have today, 10 years later, that addressed the outcomes of each of those findings. Michael, maybe you want to comment on those early days and how we executed that 8:30 call.
Yeah, it was pretty intense because, and I think that is a central point to the discipline of the processes that were put into place, is this idea of not allowing that the ubiquitous nature of Listeria to become a source of complacency. We right. had to follow this in a very disciplined way, this seek and destroy process that looks to find root cause and resolution and mitigation for every single finding. So, you know, once the resources are applied in the surveillance system around the environmental monitoring program and the standards against that will be measured, as well as what mitigation would be standard practice in the event of a positive, then we overlaid that with, as Randy said, this idea that food safety and our safety promise is something that has to be executed every day, every single day, every minute of every day, and it was going to bubble up to the very top echelon of the business. So everybody in the network, operations, executive, and the food safety team participated in this daily 8:30 call that for at least, I think, Randy, 2 or 3 years was chaired by me, I think, was it not? For a couple of 3 years. And we basically reviewed every finding every day from the prior day. So every day's findings from the prior day. So every swab, every positive result was reviewed every day in terms of the seek and destroy, the root cause hypothesis and what the mitigation was. And that kind of rigor and discipline exists still to this day. I don't, the participation is a little different today because we don't, the frequency then was very high. The frequency today is almost non-existent. So, but having said that, you know, I get a report every day about yesterday's findings on anywhere from L1s all the way to L4s, and take every one of them, even though they're few and far between today, but they still exist. And we take every one of them seriously, and there's a root cause analysis, and the resources are applied to them. So, you know, it's, you know, we use the phrase here, it's like brushing your teeth. You know, you got to do it every day for hygiene. And
that's right.
At the end, that we were very focused on those disciplines, and they have a dramatic impact on the outcomes.
Yeah, Barbara, I'd just add that some of those early calls with Michael and the senior management team were quite animated, and they really drove, discipline and rigor in our processes. And you know, a few plant managers and FSQA managers learned very quickly that explaining the root cause through just saying we need, you know, to retrain employees, that did not fly. And you know, Michael didn't let that explanation ever survive. You know, we challenged our teams to dig deep to truly find, you know, what the root cause of the issues were. And I think that, you know, that has made us a better company in many ways, not just with Listeria control, but it's led to rigor and discipline in many areas.
I would think that for employees who had gone through that, you wouldn't need to convince them that all of these steps were important, that they would, you know, what the impact on the business would be. You know, you've talked about, Randy, you talked about completely disassembling the slicers daily, and you and Michael have talked about addressing all of the positives that come in and doing a root cause analysis. What other improvements can you say were taken as a result of the investigation and what you were able to find?
Yeah, Michael, I'll take that one. So it's a great question. You know, and the list would be long, and probably I wouldn't be able to highlight all of the various things, both small and large, that we've done to try to improve our overall performance with respect to Listeria control. But I will highlight a few things, and this is not news to many people that would be listening, but in the ready-to-eat, the high-risk ready-to-eat environment, obviously segregation is key. And having segregation between raw and ready-to-eat is a basic tenet, but it needs to be honored. And in some of our older facilities, we didn't have physical separation in every instance. And so wherever there was a chance for, you know, employee crossover or you know, lack of segregation, whether it be materials or people, we had to put in very effective management processes to prevent risk. So that, you know, segregation would be a big topic, and building, engineering segregation, physical segregation into your ready-to-eat facilities is critically important. So if you don't have that now, you need it. And that's one thing we've worked to do through the investments that we've made in our infrastructure. Secondly, keeping that environment dry is critically important. Having a wet environment in a ready-to-eat high-risk area is a very challenging situation, and sometimes it's unavoidable for certain types of products, but I would challenge anyone to work really hard with their engineering teams to put in adequate air handling systems and other procedures that eliminate water on the floors and water in the processes because that dramatically improves your ability to control Listeria and keep it away from food contact surfaces. You know, those are two, segregation and dry environments are two very important concepts, and we've tried to implement those wherever we can. Of course, good employee practices and you know, hygiene and wearing proper PPE, those are important factors as well. And then the last thing I would say, it's all about the people, and you know, instilling in all the management teams as well as all the employees on the floor, the importance of following the protocols and you know, and understanding the why we ask them to follow certain protocols, you know, and so getting the culture within a facility to the point where you know they really understand the basics of food safety practices and really embracing that and understanding why it's so important. You know, I'd highlight that as well.
Yeah, it's
the only thing I'd add to that. I might add, Randy, to your thoughts is the very significant focus that we've placed on this very important point of cultural shift across the organization, because all of the systems and processes in the world are not going to mitigate a culture that's not aligned to this goal. We started that. Everybody understood the need. That was clear. I was able to communicate this collaboratively with all of the leadership team to the entire organization as the essence of why we existed, to provide safe food, great tasting food in a safe work environment. We packaged it up as our safety promise, so that was a great call to action across the organization. But our model of cultural shift, which starts with defining our expectations, followed by teaching the hell out of those expectations, so everybody's given the tools and the understanding and the capabilities to be able to meet the needs of those expectations, and then finally acting in a way that's consistent with those that target outcome. I think, as fundamental as all of the core systems and processes and follow-ups. In fact, I think those systems and processes and daily actions were part of that cultural shift continuum. And everything from our food safety foundations program, which all employees of all disciplines have to go through, to how we report on food safety at the plant level all the way up to the executive level today, I think underpins that cultural shift.
All right, this is a good time to give a shout out to you, Randy, for being involved in our food safety culture ebook that Lone Jesperson organized for us. And your contribution to that was very much appreciated. Michael, you know, your comments about culture as well. What have you learned with regard to key leader competencies that should be used in crisis management that you would, you know, advice you would maybe give to a CEO of another food company who thinks that they've already done what they need to do and there's, you know, they've got everything all together?
I would say that advice in these contexts is very situational. So, you know, I think we have to put that into context. Of every circumstance is a bit different. Every culture is a bit different. Every company, if God forbid they face a crisis, is probably unique. I would say that the biggest enemy of a positive outcome in food safety is complacency. So a leader that feels, I have this covered, we are good, we don't have risks, our systems are secure, likely is concluding that complacency is starting to have some effect on their business and they might wake up to a surprise someday. Mm-hmm. So avoiding that complacency, recognizing that a dose of paranoia is probably your best friend, is very healthy coming into these circumstances and leading in a world of food safety.
Right.
Feeling that your next crisis is just around the corner is likely a very constructive attitude at the executive level. In terms of the crisis themselves, if there is, the tragic outcome that we experienced, our response to that, I think, was defining for us. It was a reflection of the leadership culture that existed at Maple Leaf. It was characterized by three attributes that I think, again, are defining of our organizational culture, of the leadership culture at Maple Leaf. Number one, it was very action-oriented, and we accepted the need to create an action plan that was both visible and immediate with a sense of urgency throughout the organization. Number two is it was rooted in accountability and accepting accountability. It's an abject lesson in the difference between responsibility and accountability. Oftentimes we're accountable for things that we're not fully responsible for, but our consumers trust us, and there was a breach in that trust. We failed them. Our accountability for that, regardless of the ability to point fingers or not identify direct links to responsibility, we were clearly 100% accountable for that outcome, and accepting that accountability defines the response. And finally, our culture is rooted in a level of transparency that is shocking to some, very gratifying and comforting for us. But that transparency has to be reflected in how these things are managed. And we tried to make that very real in how we went through that crisis, to be completely transparent, to be, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Right.
We took that through to the end. So in advance of any tragedy of this nature, I would urge any executive to not allow complacency inside their organization to have any oxygen. And in the event of a crisis, those core values that are part of our DNA of an action orientation, a transparency, an ownership, an accountability, I think, central to finding your way through a very difficult path like this. Also recognizing that accountability and action orientation and transparency doesn't age well. So you gotta exhibit those things in a real hurry.
Right.
Because a week later, they may be stale dated.
Yeah, I'd add to that. I think Michael has really answered that question very well, and it's very, very good advice for other leaders in the food industry. And that last point about timeliness is so important. Barbara, we actually have received calls from other companies, CEOs from other companies, during a crisis and asking for advice. And unfortunately, and I can point to a couple of examples where the calls came about 2 or 3 weeks after the crisis occurred. And, frankly, the advice Michael just laid out about being action-oriented, being accountable and owning it, and then being transparent, none of those really work 3 weeks later.
Right.
Like, you during the crisis, you have to be front and center right away in a very timely way. You've got to understand the problem quickly and own it and react accordingly. And I think, if I can say so, this is what I feel Michael and his leadership team did so well.
Right.
In the light of a very difficult, very difficult situation back in 2008.
Given the call centers that were set up and how many phone calls you folks had to make to spread the word that these products needed to be pulled, it is kind of mind-boggling how much had to be put in place almost immediately. But looking back, so 10 years ago, as fabulous as your response was to those first calls and what you had to do, is there anything that if the same thing happened today, which of course it won't because you guys have all the proper programs in place, but God forbid, should something like this happen again for you today, is there anything that you would do differently?
First of all, under the column of complacency, I would never buy into the statement, of course it won't. We live in a paranoid world of it could be just around the corner, and we're going to manage appropriately. So we genuinely believe in that principle of complacency as our enemy. If I look back and say, what would we do differently? I think there are some things in our messaging and our communication that we probably could have done a little bit differently. I think there was an initial desire to move on from the subject. And it took us a few months of reflection to recognize that actually we're never entitled to forget. So this is not something you can ever move on from. Right? The initial feedback from many in the organization is, oh, Michael, can't we move on now? And the realization comes to roost that actually we can never forget. The victims are entitled to move on, and they're entitled to forget in their own way, but we're never entitled to forget. So, you know, and that showed up in a few areas. I think our systems and approaches to the management of Listeria are always under continuous improvement. So we could always look back and say, "Yeah, I wish we'd known in 2008 what we know today." And there's always elements of both system and technical improvement that I think we could add to it. I wish we'd have engaged stakeholders, maybe the broader stakeholders, more effectively, because in an industry like ours, you're only as good as your weakest link. I think we could have done a better job maybe of engaging all of our other industry competitors and stakeholders, because it affected them as well negatively and for a period of time. So nobody wins in these types of crises, and we've made food safety a non-competitive factor in our business in every way possible. So we probably could have done a better job in that. And finally, our attention is, I think we have moved into, you know, simply world class status, not perfection. We don't certainly don't expect to ever achieve perfection, but I think we are in a world leading position around Listeria management today. But there are other pathogens out there that the bar keeps rising, and we need to continue to be focused on some of these other pathogens in the same way that the bar was raised for us in Listeria. Certainly the top of mind would be in Salmonella, and how we build a multi-year strategy to become world leaders in Salmonella management across our portfolio in the Canadian industry is very top of mind for us, and in the spirit of continuous improvement. So, so I would probably point to all of those things, Barbara. Randy, you might have some things to add to the list.
Sure. Yeah, I would just add, I think you said it really well, Michael, but with respect to other pathogens, I'd just add to that other processes as well, that, you know, we operate over 20 manufacturing sites in multiple farm locations, both in pork and poultry, and more recently our company's now into alternative plant-based proteins, which carry their own unique pathogen risks and hazards. And so for our business, it's a constant challenge to keep up with, you know, what the key hazards are, and how to best manage those hazards. And so that's really what drives a lot of our focus and activity today. We do feel our Listeria control programs are I'll say stable is, I think, the right choice of words. Never satisfied, but stable. But we've got challenges in other parts of our business. We produce fresh poultry. in a large way in the Canadian market. And you know, there's challenges in fresh, you know, raw products, raw agricultural products that don't receive a kill step, a heat treatment step, and you know, we've got to manage the food safety challenges with those. I'll just continue that briefly, Barbara, and just talk about one way that we try to stay abreast of as a company is we established a Food Safety Advisory Council back in 2009 with some, you know, world-renowned experts advising us and challenging us, and they come in several times a year and work with our team and critique our programs and you know, provide challenge to how we're going about managing our food safety programs and processes. And that's proved very helpful over the years. Several of our council members have been are either on your advisory board or have been guests on this podcast. So, you know, they prove very useful to us on a regular basis.
It sounds like these are all terrific ways that you're combating complacency, as you mentioned, Michael, one of your major challenges, by bringing in fresh eyes to look at the systems that you've put in place. And I know, Randy, that you and I have talked separately about new programs that you're putting in place at Maple Leaf that we hope to you know, have an article for our readers sometime next year. As we wrap up today, I wanted to ask you about the commemoration of this event that is happening this year, and particularly to ask you, Randy, about the symposium that you folks are developing.
Sure. I'll take both of those. Michael, please comment as well. But as part of Michael's point earlier about we can never forget as a company about this event, we use this moment in the annual calendar, actually specifically August 23rd, to commemorate what happened at our Barter Road facility 10 years ago. And this year, actually a couple of weeks ago, we held that commemoration event where all employees were invited to a hosted webcast with Michael and myself. We held a moment of silence where the lights were turned down in our facilities, and we spent a moment of silence to think about what happened to those victims and the families that were affected by that outbreak. And we use that as a way to remind our team members of how important our jobs are in producing safe food. And it's a nice moment in the calendar for us to do that every August. And this year was particularly meaningful, and one of the reasons we wanted to join this podcast to share our story at the 10-year anniversary mark of this event. We think it's a milestone for us, and we appreciate the opportunity to share the story. And our employees are quite motivated by the message and reinvigorated once a year to the importance of what, you know, what we do to produce safe food. Secondly, the other part of your question is just about our food safety symposia. We're actually hosting our 10th annual event. It's a one-day session that we host every year about in October. It's actually October 2nd. We'd welcome anyone who's interested to attend. We'll provide to you a link to the registration page in the show notes. Barbara, I assume you can place that there. But this year we're focusing on this notion of culture and trust, the importance of trust in building effective food safety programs. And we've got an excellent lineup of speakers. I can list a few names. Mike Taylor, former head of FDA, and now working with the STOP organization. Mike will join us as a keynote along with two victims who will tell their story of how they were personally impacted by foodborne illness, and you know, create that significant point about why it's so important we do our jobs well. And then we've got a whole series of speakers afterwards that will talk about how they bring culture and the notion of trust and building relationships to bear within their own food processing operations. So So we're welcoming anyone and everyone to join our day on October 2nd, and you know, I'd extend that invite to anyone. So thank you, Michael. Anything to add to our commemoration?
Just how important it is to us to and important and how deeply emotional it is for us to commit every year to never forgetting, and it's a very meaningful part of our annual calendar. And finally, to highlight the reflection on this annual Maple Leaf Food Safety Symposium as a reflection of the fact that our industry is united in this effort, in that we have to approach food safety excellence collaboratively, because we're only as good as the weakest link. And that's, I think, been an important dimension of the annual symposium. And I think government, academia, industry have all, and our customer base have all been highly vested in that journey together. And the symposium is a great event. So I'd hope as much of the audience on this podcast can sign up and attend, both in the past and in the future.
That's terrific. I want to thank you both again for being with us on the podcast. And given the really important lessons that you've learned, I would encourage food company leadership to contact you in a preventive way rather than when they're in the middle of trying to deal with the crisis. Because as you said, Randy, you know, it's nice to get that information sooner rather than later, because the communication and the actionability of the response needs to happen right from the very beginning. Again, thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks so much to Michael McCain and Randy Huffman for sharing your important story and lessons learned at Maple Leaf Foods. As Randy mentioned during the podcast, and I believe that was his personal invitation to please attend, you'll find the registration link to the Maple Leaf Food Safety Symposium entitled Culture and Trust, Essential Elements of Food Safety, that's being held on October 2nd. You'll also find a link to the Food Safety Culture ebook in the show notes of your podcast player or on our website at foodsafetymagazine.com/podcast, and then find episode 33. You don't have to miss an episode of Food Safety Matters. Please subscribe. One click makes sure that new and bonus episodes are delivered to your player whenever they drop. And if you have feedback, and we hope you do, please send us an email at podcast@foodsafetymagazine.com or drop us a note on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. That's it for us today. Our next regular episode will post on September 25th. We'll talk to you then.